in. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, December the 14th, 2017. 17 minutes past the hour, now 18 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program, and we want to get into this program today very quickly because we have got two great guest. I want to do a little bit of housekeeping here before we get started, though. Tomorrow here on WWGH Radio, we have a very special presentation, Destination Heaven, a WWGH special, which I will host Friday, tomorrow, 4:10 to 6 p.m. It's a discussion of what happens after this life is over. I have conducted interviews for this special with Eben Alexander, neurosurgeon and author of the best-selling book Proof of Heaven, Tony Campolo, the spiritual advisor to President Bill Clinton, Bob Nelson, a scientist who froze the first man in the first cryogenics test ever in 1967, the man with the golden voice Ted Williams, who talks about thoughts of suicide years ago and what stopped him. Legendary comedian Phyllis Diller talking about dying on the operating table three times. Dan DeMura, head of the Recovering from Religious chapter in Columbus, Ohio. He was a former pastor who is now an atheist. Rabbi Mars from the Temple of Israel in Columbus. And Nick Busick, a former WWF pro wrestler who had a near-death experience. So we will be in search of what happens when this life is over. Destination Heaven, a WWGH special presentation, 4:10 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. Also want to let you know, next Tuesday, December 19th, from 6:15 to 8 p.m., we will have the WWGH Christmas special, live musical performances by Paul and Glenna Savage. We have the Lasekne brothers coming in, and Mr. Jingling will be here, Santa's keeper of the keys for so many years. And next hour, just an hour from now, we will be joined by the gentleman who has won more Emmy Awards than anybody else in the history of the Emmys. He is also the author of a new book titled The Grouchy Historian, but you probably remember him best as Lou Grant on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Ed Asner, live on this program next hour. And for all you grandparents and parents and kids out there, Ed Asner is starring in A Storybots Christmas on Netflix. He portrays Santa Claus, so check that out. Storybots Christmas. Now this hour, this is what makes it a great day. Ed Asner next hour, and this hour we're joined by a gentleman who has not been on this program in some time, so it is always my great honor to have him on. I want to tell you a little story about this gentleman. When I first got into radio, I was working at another radio station, and this gentleman made the trip from Columbus, Ohio, where he is a very big deal, and beyond Columbus, Ohio, he's a big deal, drove to the studio here in Marion, did an hour interview with me, and then when the interview was over, went out and had dinner and picked up the check. This is a delightful man. You probably remember him best as Mr. Tree from Lucy's Toy Shop, and his many years with WBNS Television, the legendary, hey, holiday time, who could ask for more, Chuck White. Chuck, how are you?
I'm very well, Scott. Thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. How are things at holiday time?
Oh, this is a great time of the year, and we love Christmas. We love the holiday season. We have an opportunity to get together with all of our family, and this is a really super time for us because we have our own traditions. When my wife and I got married well over 55 years ago, we sort of started a tradition where we would spend 1 year in my parents' home and 1 year in her parents' home. And so we alternated back and forth for many, many years. Well, both of our parents have gone now, and we spend most of our Christmases here. And other than the fact that last year we did a destination Christmas. My granddaughters don't like cold weather. They live in Atlanta. And my oldest son has gotten to the point where he's been in Atlanta for such a long time that he, too, would prefer the warmer weather. So last year, I rented three villas on the beach in Florida, and I had the whole family come, and we spent the Christmas in Florida last year. And it was a great time, great super. We love getting together at Christmas time.
You know, I know a lot of the people who live in Ohio who go to Florida for the winter. A lot of them wait and leave after Christmas, I think because they like Christmas in the colder climate.
I prefer it, but my kids don't. Well, at least my oldest son. My two younger sons love the cold weather. So, my oldest son, who is the father of our only two grandchildren, they don't like the cold weather. So we try to please everybody, you know, and when you have a family, you try to, you know, make concessions for everyone concerned.
Absolutely. Chuck, we booked you on the show this past weekend, and we couldn't have foreseen the sad news yesterday of the passing of Tom McNutt at age 84. I know he spent some time at WBNS. He was very good to me. I've put a blog up on the internet remembering Tom. Anytime he came to Marion, he would give me an interview and was always so exuberant. What are your memories of Tom McNutt?
Tom was a great guy. I would always call him when I had a gardening problem, frankly, and he was always very, very gracious and very generous with his information for me. But he was very knowledgeable and just a wonderful human being.
You know, I never saw Tom in a bad mood. It was when he went on camera, it was always like the first time.
Absolutely, absolutely. He knew what he was talking about when he gave all of his reports, and so it's kind of a pleasure to hear someone who really knows their business, and Tom certainly knew his.
And he wasn't afraid, and I think about this a lot in local television and national news now. He wasn't afraid to make a mistake. He said, if it's live and I make a mistake, I'm going to acknowledge it, and we're going to go on, and we'll keep having fun.
Well, I think both Tom and I grew up in live television and live radio as well. Not radio for me as much as television, but you learn to live with your mistakes and you move on. And because you will make them whenever you're on the air, mistakes will be made. There's no question about it. So rather than hanging your head and feeling very badly, you just simply move on and correct the mistake the next time you have the opportunity to do that.
You know, this is not a critique of Columbus, Ohio news. It's a critique. Everywhere I go, I see the same thing. The local television news anchors, no matter where you are, which now seems to be the only local television that we have, they all dress similar. They all have similar haircuts. It's kind of strange. You know, you don't have the Jimmy Crumbs, the Tom McNutts, the Fritz the Night Owls. Those type of people have all went away, and I think that's heavily lacking.
Well, Scott, I guess it follows the trend. If they're, you know, television like hairstyles and everything and clothing is a trendy medium, and so I think most of the anchors are following the trend of today's market. So if the trend is to dress the way they're dressing or speak the way they're speaking, I think that's just sort of part of the marketing of television, and it's a trendy thing, kind of business, and so they're simply following the trend, I believe. You know, granted, it's different from what we did when we were younger, but that's okay, because, you know, nothing is more constant in life than change.
You know, I think the best things being produced in Columbus right now, not that the newscasts are not great, but I think the Sunday morning local talk shows are tremendous. I think they're doing a great job with those.
So do I. So do I. I think you're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. I think they're giving them a little more latitude. Chuck, how did you break into television?
Well, it's a long story, but at any rate, I'm sure you all remember Fritz the Night Owl. And Fritz and I were college roommates. I was at Ohio State University. And Fritz had worked at WBNS-TV in the news department as a copywriter, putting together all of the everything before the show went on the air for the anchors. And Fritz had was drafted into the Army, and he and I were roommates. And he says, "Hey, man, you want to get a job at WBNS-TV?" So I said, "I'm not interested." My major was psychology with a minor in journalism. But I thought, well, yeah, I'm really not interested. I just want to do something else. But he says, "Why not give it a try?" Well, I went and applied, got the job, and 50 years later, I left.
When you got into it, what was it that appealed to you?
I think the creativity of the people. For instance, I tend to be a rather creative person. I like doing things that are somewhat unusual, but and feeling my creativity is appreciated. So I think that's what I appreciated very much. And there was an acceptance, I think, by the people in the media that I felt very strongly attached to. And so I thought, you know, there's an opportunity here to really get into something that I think I would be very interested in sticking with it. And as I said, 50 years later, I left it. But I enjoyed it very much. For instance, when we had an audition for, I started in the news department as a copywriter, much like Fritz did. Our job was we had AP Wire at the time. We didn't have all of the modern conveniences that are there now. And I was to get pictures from the AP Wire, the photo fax machine, take those pictures off of the wire, and attach them to a board, a flip card. And that flip card was placed on a board, and that's where the camera would zoom in. Well, that was my job. And also to write from Bill Drenton, who was our news photographer at the time, would go out and shoot the stories, and he'd might give all of these notes, and he'd bring all of these notes back to me and talk to me about it. And I would sit down and write. I would write, and then I would give that information to the news anchors, and then they would read it accordingly. But that was my job initially. And, of course, times have changed dramatically since that time. But that was an excitement because it gave me a chance to write, for one thing. But we would also take information off the AP Wire and edit that information. And that was also a very exciting and creative outlet for me because I enjoyed editing and I enjoyed writing very much. So that's how I got started. And then we had I worked in the news department for a while and doing in that capacity, assisting the anchors. And then we had an opportunity to move on in the organization, and I saw some other areas that I would like to work in. So I moved on into the production department. Then I moved into the film editing department, and this is after a long period of time, of course. And then we had an audition for a new children's show called Lucy's Toy Shop. We had a children's show before that called TV Kindergarten, and that was hosted by Betty Jones. She was, Betty died. And so that show, that left us without a children's show, and John Haldy, who was the president of the company, decided that he wanted to have a new children's show, one that would be focused on a toy shop. And Lucy Gassaway, at that time, her name later was Van Leo, when her husband Howard Gassaway died. And so she remarried a guy named Tony Van Leo. And so Lucy was the puppeteer with one puppet, of course, Stanley Mouse, on TV Kindergarten. And John Haldy called Lucy up in his office and said, I want to start a children's show, and I want to base it on a toy shop with puppets in it. And when you walk into the shop, I want all the puppets to come to life. Well, Lucy was very excited about that. Well, she had only one puppet, and that was Stanley Mouse, and that was the puppet that she did. So they had an audition for the rest of the show and the rest of the puppets, and they thought they would need five or six other characters. So I auditioned for the show, and I changed my voice for many characters, and so they decided, well, if it's a practical move, we don't need five or six other characters. We have one person who can do five or six characters. So that's how I got into Lucy's Toy Shop, and then I did that for 14 years. And then I moved on from that into other areas of the business. I became public affairs director. I became assistant public affairs director first, and then Tom Gleba was public affairs director at the time. Then he moved on to California. He went to La Jolla, California, and then I became public affairs director. Meanwhile, we had an opening for an anchor on the news, for 7 o'clock news, and I had some journalism background, very strong journalism background. So John Hawley asked me to, you know, if I would be interested in doing that along with Chet Long. Chet Long was our anchor at the time at the 7 o'clock news, and so they ran me through some tests, et cetera, and some auditions on the air, and I did pretty well. And so I was hired as a co-anchor of the 7 p.m. news, and then eventually the anchor of the weekend news, Saturday and Sunday news. So and that's basically how I got into television. And I then later on in my career, there was an opening in the public affairs department. As I mentioned, Tom Gleba was there, and I went into assistant. By that time, but incidentally, we did a lot of multitasking. You didn't do just one job. You did, like, for instance, when I was in the film editing department, I would go into Lucy's Toy Shop and do that as well. And I'd do the Lucy's Toy Shop from 9 to 10 in the morning and then leave that and go into my office into the film editing department. And so later on, I had an opportunity to be promoted to public affairs director, and I chose that because it was a management position. And I enjoyed that role for many, many years later as well. Then eventually I became one of the executive producers of the company, and so all of the major events that we had of the station, I was in charge of, and my department was in charge of that.
When you were working on Lucy's Toy Shop, how was the creative process on creating a new character, coming up with the voice, coming up with the personality? How did that happen?
Very often in the hallway. We were, after we would do the show from 9 to 10, we would rehearse the show in the morning, earlier in the morning, but the show was never scripted, by the way. It was all ad lib. We would develop a format for the program, but after we would do a show, and then I had these ideas about, hey, I got an idea for a puppet, for instance, and we were standing in the hallway, and I gave this voice of this puppet to Lucy, and I said, why don't we have a French poodle? And it would go like his name was Pierre François, and Pierre François would create the birthday cake, a little birthday cake, so the children could watch the birthday cake come on the air. And so Lucy would listen to my voice and listen to the character that I created. She went right back to her shop, took her scissors, cut out the puppet. The next morning, Pierre François was born on the air. Mm. So that was one of the ways that we created a puppet, created a character. And, of course, Dragon and Stanley were the two major puppets on the show. They were the protagonist, and there was a second character that Lucy did called Wonder Witch, and she was the antagonist, and she would create havoc in the whole show. And it was interesting when Lucy's daughters were here during her funeral. Pam said to me, Chuck, you know, when you and Mom and the director would rehearse the show, because we'd sometimes do it in her kitchen. We thought you guys were off your rocker. We thought you were nuts because we talked as if we believed the characters were real. And I said, Pam, we did believe the characters were real because if we didn't, the children wouldn't. So that's how we came about creating characters. And each one, I would develop a character each time. For instance, George the Giraffe. He was a puppet character, the tall, large giraffe. And I just came up with the idea of a character that spoke like this. His name is George the Giraffe, and he spoke like this. And he would do fractured nursery rhymes. And he would do things like, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. and all the king's horses and all the king's men had scrambled eggs for breakfast. Well, the children at home were just laughing. They would raise their, they'd yell, scream, "That's not the way it goes, George. That's not the way it goes." So those are fun times. Those are really fun times and creative times. Each character that we created was embedded in the minds of children, and they love these characters. And we always ended the show with a moral of some kind, whatever it was that our theme of that day was. We would have some kind of a moral to leave with children to so that they can appreciate what they should be doing correctly.
Did you have a favorite?
How to say please.
Did you have a favorite character?
Pierre. Pierre was my favorite.
Mr. Tree, people remember this so fondly. Why do you think that sticks out in so many people's minds?
Because he was such a large character, and that was he was the most famous, I mean, he was the most popular, I should say, character on the show because he was so big, and every morning he would give the weather forecast, and he would give the sage advice, and children absolutely believed this tree was real. And even Dom Tiberi told me that someone asked him when he was being interviewed, who is your mentor when you were growing up? And he says, my mentor was Mr. Tree. So, and Joe Holbrook, who was our weatherman, when his son Steve was 5 years old or so, one of his friends asked him, do you think Mr. Tree gets his weather from your dad, Joe Holbrook? And Steve indignantly said, no, of course not. My dad gets his weather from Mr. Tree. But the other character who was very popular earlier on, many people don't remember this unless they were into Lucy's Toy Shop at a very early age, and that was the first character that I developed, was George the Giraffe. And George... He had these fractured nursery rhymes, and when my oldest son Craig was 5 years old or so, he was having a little to do with a friend of his, and his friend said that his father had taken him to the zoo, and I got a chance to pet the giraffes, Craig. He said, you've never done that. And Craig says, that's nothing, my father is a giraffe. That's how much he believed.
And people still do. There are still websites all these years later devoted to that show. Lucy the person, what kind of lady was she off camera?
Lucy was absolutely one of the most creative individuals I have ever known. Lucy was of Swedish descent, and she had she was so creative. She could cut out a puppet in her hand. After I would create the puppet, the voice for the puppet and the character, she would just simply cut the puppet out, and she did it right in front of me even, and then put it together. But she was also a very sweet lady, very, very wonderful lady, very, very talented. And Lucy, when she was younger, do you know what a hoofer is, Scott?
No, I don't.
A hoofer is a dancer, and she was a hoofer in her youth, and at the Palmer House in Chicago, and she danced with a choral group and chorus line, I should say. But she also danced by herself, and she was a great dancer. But she was also into acting, and she was very talented and very sweet and very creative, very creative.
You know, Chuck, when I brought up that you were going to be on the show. Of course, Lucy's Toy Shop is the first thing that comes up, but people want to know, and I was thinking about this morning, 10 years after his death, Flippo the Clown, Bob Marvin, still in people's hearts. How did you meet Bob? Take me through your life with Bob Marvin.
Bob Marvin was a dear friend, for one. I was his floor director. He would always refer to Charlie. Well, I was Charlie in the back of standing next to the camera. I was on the floor crew at that time. And Bob Marvin was absolutely a genuinely nice guy. It was really, but he also was extremely creative, and he was, his humor was basically adult humor, but the children loved him because he was a clown. And every evening, right before 4 o'clock, all of them, the staff, would gather in the dressing room to hear Bob, as he was putting his makeup on, because you could set your clock by the which line went on his makeup, because it was on at the exact same time every single day. And Bob did not enter the studio until at least 15 to 20 seconds, literally seconds, before he went on the air. And his timing was always perfect, absolutely perfect, but a genuinely nice guy and extremely creative. A funny story about Bob, when I said we were on the floor crew and I was his floor director, one day, because he only entered the studio 20 seconds before he went on the air, we did a lot of practical jokes back in those days. We could get away with them then, but we can't do that. Couldn't do that now. But we decided to, rather than erect his set, which consisted of four flats and two rakes, and the rakes are the sides of the flats, and of course the flats were decorated into a clown shop, into his shop. We decided that to play a practical joke on him, we would not erect the set. So the music was playing, his theme music was playing, and he came running into the studio, and he looked around, and there was no set. He absolutely, totally lost it. He started laughing so hard, and he went in front of the camera. He says, "Folks," he says, "something very funny just happened," and so he told them what had happened. And so, meanwhile, while he was on the air, he started to erect the set. So people got an opportunity to see how the set went up, because we actually put it together while he was on the air. But yes, Bob was a superhuman being, and very fond of his children, very fond of his children. He lived for them. But he was also so creative, yeah.
You know, Chuck, what has always been so interesting to me about Flippo the Clown being here in Marion, there's a dance teacher here who's been teaching for 75 years, Martha Douse. She talks about having Bob come down at Christmas time, this time of year, to entertain the kids at her Christmas recital, which he did. My mother won a bicycle from Flippo at the fair when she was younger, and my grandmother told that story for the longest time. There are people who will come up who say, "I was in a restaurant when Bob Marvin was in town, Flippo, and he came up and talked to me." It just seems like he was everywhere.
It was. It was every swimming pool, actually. When there would be the first of summer, he would go out to the swimming pool. So would Lucy, by the way, go out to the swimming pools and meet and greet kids. And we would go together, actually. But Bob and Lucy would do a lot of public appearances. Lucy and I did a lot of public appearances, and we would drive all over the state of Ohio into areas that were central Ohio, I should say, that reached our audience, and we went to Zanesville, and I don't remember the name of the group that we did the show for, but I asked someone recently, did they know who Agnes Moorhead was, and they had no idea who she was. She was born in Zanesville, Ohio, and she was the witch. She was the witch's mother on Bewitched. And so then they finally realized who she was.
Well, it's fascinating to me, Flippo, because when he turned 79, he had a big birthday party, I believe at the Historical Society in Columbus. You were one of the speakers that night. I was lucky enough to attend. I interviewed Bob that night, and I love telling this story, and I'm sure you remember this. There were a lot of people there, and Flippo had posters. Color posters that he gave to everybody who attended his 79th birthday party. And he was not in the best of health that time. had issues, and I think he had said that was going to be his last public appearance. And I think I was actually talking to you and Fritz, who was there, and we were inside the room, and you guys were talking to a lot of people, and I thought that Bob had left, because I knew, you know, he wasn't in the best of health. And I remember, I wanted to get my poster signed, as everybody did. And I remember walking out into the lobby, and there was Bob Marvin, and I was at the end of the line, and there had to be 500 people, and here he was, 79 years old, not feeling the greatest. He stayed until everybody got an autograph, and if you wanted a picture, he took it with you. And I still have that picture, and the autograph actually hangs on the wall here in the radio station. He ended up dying 5 months later. He was so gracious.
He was really an icon. Bob's sense of humor, and he had a great sense of humor. I mean, his jokes were just constant. But his sense of humor followed him to almost to, well, literally to his deathbed. The day before he died, the rabbi was in to see him, and he says, "Bob, is there anything I can do for you?" And he said, "Yeah." He says, "Call ahead to the other side and get me good seats." Wonderful sense of humor.
I
knew he was
it.
Dying, but his sense of humor never left him.
Chuck, there was a question that was submitted about Bob Marvin. Why did he go to Cube? Why did he leave WBNS in the late 70s?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I remember, Scott, I do remember that Cube was just beginning, and they offered him such an enormous salary that I think it was difficult for him to turn it down, and because it was the beginning of Cube. And they were trying to get everything off the charts here, so I do recall that he was really torn between leaving WBNS TV and going to Cube, but they made him a very generous offer, and it was one that in this business, you know, you go where you're wanted. And where you can, the money will pay for your existence, and so I think he went where the money was, but I think that's why he left. I'm not quite sure that that's the total reason, Scott, but I just simply don't remember. I do know that he was offered a tremendous salary to come over to Cube, and they knew how popular he was, so they wanted to start Cube with someone who had that popularity.
Oh, and he certainly did. Was there a feeling that this was a big deal at WBNS that he had left?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my God, yes. He was, the two idols that we had were Lucy's Toy Shop and Flippo's Early Show. Our ratings were even higher than our news ratings. And at that time, that is, of course. But, yeah, these were the two major stars of WBNS TV.
When you look back at your 50-year career, Joe Holbrook, and of course Bob Marvin, and Lucy, and Fritz the Night Owl, and all those great people, what memories stick out in your mind of that great time?
Joe Holbrook's sense of humor, and most people I don't think had an opportunity to know what a wonderful sense of humor he had. Joe could break me up in a second with his sense of humor. Bob Marvin and his generosity, and he was a very generous person. His personality was just right on, spot on, and he was always there. And Lucy was just the most creative individual I've known. Three and Fritz, of course. Fritz we've been friends since we were in college, actually. As a matter of fact, Fritz, when we were roommates, I don't know if we've got time enough for me to tell you this story, but I was so naive when I was a kid. This is the story of Fritz and me in college. And when I first came to Columbus, Ohio, I was just a green freshman out of high school. And I was, not a freshman, I was a sophomore. And I roomed with Fritz, and Fritz, I was the most gullible human being in the world. Fritz was a practical joker to no end, and he could really, he was also quite a wordsmith. He could, Fritz, his knowledge of the, his vocabulary was just incredible. But at any rate, and they had developed, it was at that time, the insurance, the student insurance program. Well, I very happily went over there to the administrative office and bought my insurance for student insurance. I came back to the apartment, and I said, "Hey, man, look what I just bought the student insurance." And he says, "Oh, man." I said, "What?" He says, "You didn't fall for that, did you, Chuck?" I said, "Fall for what?" He says, "It's a ruse. It's a scam." I said, "You got to be kidding me." He says, "No, it's a scam, man." So, believing him, I went barreling back over to the administration office and said, "I want my money back. This is a scam." But they talked to me and they thought I was crazy. They finally convinced me that it is not a scam. It was perfectly legitimate. And so I went back, and of course he was laughing his head off because I believed him. Well, that was many, many tricks like that he would pull on me. Well, then he was dating a woman named Pat Singer, very beautiful redhead, who had a heart of gold, and they decided that they decided to get married. Well, by this time, after he had pulled so many practical jokes on me, I was like the man who cried wolf. I didn't believe him. So, and when Pat says she pulls out holds her finger out and shows her engagement ring, I said, "Oh, he could have bought that in a dime store. I don't believe it." Well, she was hurt, really hurt. And I didn't mean to hurt her, but I just didn't believe him. So finally, I was invited to the wedding, and I thought he'd go to any extreme now to pull off this practical joke. And then he invited me to the wedding. It was at Newman Hall. So as they were walking down the aisle, I thought, "Oh my God, he's really gone to the extreme now to even invited his brothers here to pull this off." So as they were walking down the aisle, the priest came out. He says, "Now, how could he have gotten the priest to fall for this?" Well, I was so naive, I thought they were still pulling my leg. Finally, after they were married, and she was walking down the aisle, and she held her finger out, her hand out, showed me the ring, and then let me know, "Okay, now do you believe me?" Well, 50 years later, after when they were celebrating their 50th anniversary, Pat held out her, I walked into the room, and she says, "Now, Chuck, with 5 children and so many grandchildren, do you finally believe that we got married?"
That's a great story.
Right.
Oh, my. You know, Chuck, being in television for so long and seeing all the changes that came along, when you watch television today, when you watch local stuff, what do you make of it? What do you make of the news business in general?
Well, it's as I said earlier, Scott, news as well as anything else, nothing is more constant in life than change. So I can't stick by and stand by what we did then and say it's nothing like it was then. Well, it isn't like it was then, but there are changes that are really good, and there are other changes that I don't care for that much. But it's changed, and I admire change, and I like to go with the flow. So it's a lot of things are not the way we did them back in the early days, back 55 years ago or so. More than 55 years actually. But that's a part of the change and part of the things that happens in life. And I guess I've learned to go with the flow.
Everybody has their own personal preference. Did you have a favorite anchor team or a favorite news person that just fits your preference?
Well, I guess Walter Cronkite, of course, on the air on the CBS News. I love Dan Rather as well. I tell you, one person I thought was an incredibly fine journalist, and that was Diane Sawyer. Diane Sawyer was incredible. In terms of the local news, I really enjoyed I can't remember her last name right now. I know her as well as I do my own. Well, it'll come to me eventually, but at any rate. Bill Pepper I enjoyed very much locally as well.
Of all the people you've met over the years, who left the biggest impression on you? Who were you most starstruck by?
In local news, you mean?
Or just whoever. Yeah, national, local, whoever.
Katharine Hepburn.
It's
strange that I would say that. But she was the most gracious human being I've ever met. And the most... She made me feel like she had known me all of her life. And that's a good feeling when you have someone of that stardom, that magnitude, and that make you feel that good about having met them. And she made me feel very, very good about having met her. So that was probably one of the people that I admired the most, and who made me feel like this is a person I really admire very much.
We've got about 4 minutes left, and I want to talk about this news business a little more, because something that astonished me, and it just happened a year ago, when President Trump was running for office, he was still a candidate, he came to Ohio not long before the election, and Colleen Marshall from Channel 4 was doing an interview with him, and he walked away from her when she asked him a question. Then I turn on the news the next morning, I turn on CNN, and there's Colleen Marshall on CNN because candidate Trump at that time had walked away from her. Then we had Colleen on, who was very nice, gracious to come on that same day and tell us what happened. And then she also let us know that the station was receiving negative criticism from Trump supporters for making that a story, which they didn't really do, because I'm sure CNN approached them. And I think, is that what news is now? It's very strange, isn't it, Chuck, that would be a news story?
The fact that he had walked away from her?
The fact that he had walked away. That was the story, that he didn't like the question.
Well, I think it just shows what happened. You know, as you well know, news is the unusual. And that was rather unusual at that time, I think, for a man who is the head of our country to walk away from an individual or a reporter who is asking a question. If you don't want to answer the question, you simply say, I'd rather not answer that. And that was his prerogative, of course, to do that, but I don't agree with it. But then again, you know, we should be in a position to agree to disagree. So,
well, I think the meat and potatoes of that story, though, that really didn't get covered was that they were attacking the news organization. What do you make of this fake news and news coverage that we have now, that people, I guess it's how people refer to it. It's a strange time to be in the news business.
I don't appreciate that at all, because I think what's happening is that people are attacking the news for reporting what they don't want reported. And that's unfortunate, because as I said, the news is unusual. Obviously, everything that happens in the news recently is reportable. It's unusual in that we're so divisive in this country right now. We seem to be going backwards rather than forward, and we've lost civility, and we've lost the ability to agree to disagree. We can all not agree on everything, but we all have a right to disagree. So that is really not fake news. And very often when we hear fake news, it's reporting someone who said something, and it that person is on the air who said it. So how can that be fake news if that person actually said what's being reported? That's what was said, so it's reported. So, yes, I think what my main point was, we have lost the sense of civility, and that's something we really need to regain. We have lost the sense of of agreeing to disagree, being able to disagree without being abused in, from our disagreement. So that's an unfortunate thing that's happening in our country today, and I think we just need to get back to being able to simply disagree, agree to disagree, and move on.
One minute left, two quick questions, and you can just leave a one-word answer if you want. Do you have any thoughts on the president, on how things are being handled in the country?
Yes, but it'll take much longer than a minute.
Can you give us a little?
I'd rather not say. I'd rather not say because I think this is the most different president we've ever had in the history of the country, and I'm not sure that what I say people will not agree with, and that's okay, and that's my feeling and my reaction, but. I think that everyone has a right to their opinion, and I defend the right of everyone to have that opinion.
And how would you like to be remembered?
I think probably someone who cared for people. I during my tenure at WBMS-TV, I tried to express my concern for humanity. And I joined many organizations so that I could express that concern for humanity. I'm on the board of the Alzheimer's Association. I was on the board of the Cancer Society. I was on the board of the Heart Association. I created the 10TV Family Fund. We fed more than 5,000 families per year. I believe in giving back to the community. And I would like to be remembered as someone who cared about humanity and about his fellow person.
Chuck White, an absolute class act, and I hope our relationship continues. It's always a true pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you, Chuck.
It was my pleasure, Scott.
Take care. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
Bye-bye. Chuck White, hey, coming back in 10 minutes with Ed Asner. Don't go anywhere.
740-244-9409.